Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
I appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll go till 9 o'clock tonight. Give everybody just a quick rundown of what we got going on for the show. Sean Windsor, USA Today, The Last Dance has a double standard. He'll come on and talk a little bit about Jordan. Certainly told his side of the story, but I think there is there are some people that have a different view on what's going on in the Last Dance documentary. So we'll get a chance to listen to his thoughts. Maria Torres of the LA Times, MLB season startup, pros and cons of three most likely scenarios. And then Mark Machado, a.k.a. Mr. Cartoon, part of LA Originals on Netflix, will be coming on at 8:30. So we got a lot of good stuff to get into. Oh, Mason in Ireland. Where the hell do these guys go in crosstalk? Thank you again, Mace, for this time with a wonderful idea of throwing a cartoon or throwing a tattoo up and then just trying to help out the brand. So I can't thank you enough, Mace. Thank you. You've done so much so far in such little time for the Sleeva Show. So just a quick thank you to Steve Mason there. Okay, so Rafi,
such an artist.
Yeah, he's one of a kind there, that Mace. Rafael Nadal says he would prefer scrapping the 2020 tennis season. This is why I want to start off with this, and I'm going to relate this back to our Los Angeles Lakers. I want to read off this quote here because I think I don't know if there's going to be players that feel the same way, but there's a specific part of his quote that I could definitely apply to the Lakers. I would sign up right now to just being ready for 2021, Nadal said in an interview with some of the Spanish publications, some of the Spanish newspapers. I'm more concerned with the Australian Open than what happens later this year. I think 2020 has been practically lost. I'm hopeful of being able to start next year. He continues to say, sadly, I'm not going to lie to you. The feeling is that we are losing a year of our lives, and at 34 years old, that is more valuable than at 20 when you have more time ahead of you. I got all these different topics. Jesse and I work on some different topics to obviously have a part of the show. And this one stuck out to me. It stuck out to me because when I hear Rafael Nadal, I think he's ranked number two right now in tennis and obviously one of the greats to do it. 33, 34 years old, instantly I just kind of start looking at the Los Angeles Lakers, right? And I'm looking at this season for the Lakers, and we've had this conversation before about the Lake Show where you feel this is their best chance. This is arguably the best chance for the Lakers with LeBron James to win an NBA championship, and there's a number of reasons why you would think that. But part of it is the timing and the age. LeBron is 35 years old. Dwight is 34. Rondo is 34. JaVale McGee is 32. Danny Green is 32. Jared Dudley, 34. I know there's some names in there that, you know, you certainly don't put on the level with the elite players around the league, LeBron being the one elite player. But these role players are also very important. We know the type of impact that Dwight Howard had for the Los Angeles Lakers this year. We know the type of impact that JaVale McGee has had. Danny Green, Rondo. Some Laker fans not as crazy, but the idea was that there's going to be this playoff Rondo that comes for the Lakers, and it would be going on right now in the second round. You hear Rafael Nadal, and in his quote when he says, the feeling is that we're losing a year of our lives, that points to probably how some of these athletes feel. If you're LeBron James and you don't get that opportunity to finish this year, of course, it's not a wasted year. It's not a wasted year, for your life or for your family. There's a lot that LeBron continues to accomplish. There's a lot that he's doing off the court. But on the court, this has been a special, special season for the Lakers, and it's all built around LeBron James. Anthony Davis, arguably the defensive player of the year. Anthony Davis came to L.A. from New Orleans, that trade in the offseason that Rob Pelinka put together. And he's as advertised, if not better. And the hope was always that AD is going to take his game to another level come playoff time, come postseason. But at the same time, I get what Nadal is saying, and I'm sure there's a lot of people in the league right now, especially those that are older and they feel like this is their window, this is their opportunity right now. I'm sure it has to feel like this would be a lost year if the Lakers can't come back and try and finish out the season, and if the NBA can as well. I had Brian Windhorst on yesterday, and Windhorst, man, I mean, he had an article on Friday that just went into all the details of some of the different challenges to finish off this season for NBA basketball, and how the NBA could also be shifting its attention to starting next season up in December. But it does make you think of the Lakers, their predicament, their situation. I think that this is the Lakers' best chance to win an NBA championship with LeBron James. Now, granted, I don't know what next year holds. Maybe LeBron James is as good as he was this year. Maybe he's even better. Or maybe let's say he's a step behind, but Anthony Davis now takes his game to another level, and that could compensate for anything lost. Maybe the Lakers find better role players, and we're sitting here from a year from now and saying, damn, this team is a lot better than it was a year ago. But when you're just in the moment, when you're in the predicament, when you're in a specific situation, you could tell that there was a combination for this Lakers team where it was winning, it was the chemistry, it was the experience. There was a number of different combinations that I felt like this is their best chance to win it all. And the moment Nadal kind of had his quote about at 33, 34, it's more valuable than 20 when you'd have more time ahead of you. The feeling is that we're losing a year of our lives. For athletes, it's a different story. And I'm sure, you know, when their careers are over, 1 year isn't going to mean that much. But these were this is a critical, critical time. Let's just say that for this Lakers team, as far as, you know, some of their greats and their role players being at the age they are. So we'll see what eventually happens. But that definitely stuck out to me. I saw another article a little bit earlier today, too, on should Kevin Durant, should he come back if he's healthy? Should that conversation even be had? GM Sean Marks says he knows his body better than anybody. Our performance team and training staff have done a tremendous job getting him to this point, but I just don't know how coming out of this pandemic will affect anybody, let alone Kevin. I want to play some quick sound here because Brian Windhorst was on The Jump a little bit earlier today with Rachel Nichols. I want to say Jay Williams was on there as well. And they were talking about Kevin Durant, and KD was definitely a topic today in sports. I mean, you couldn't turn on ESPN and not get Kevin Durant at some point every 10, 15 minutes, just simply because he's such an amazing player. And he is literally the number two player in the NBA. I don't care where you guys want to put Giannis and everything. If KD's healthy, he's right behind LeBron James. And there's an interesting scenario that could play out in the playoffs around Kevin Durant. Here's Brian Windhorst from The Jump a little bit earlier today.
Kevin had his name on the preliminary basketball roster for the Olympics for Tokyo because he thought there was a possibility he might be able to play with Team USA. Guess what? That was supposed to be July and August. We may face the return of a season in July and August. So while certainly there's no way to know, at one point Kevin thought that was a possibility. And I will say this, if we get back this season, it's going to be a free-for-all. I don't think seedings are going to matter as much. And even at the 7th seed, if Kevin Durant could possibly play, I would not rule the Nets out. So let's not assume anything.
All right, that's Brian Windhorst right there. So this is why it makes it interesting. I was doing this yesterday. Funches and I were kind of going through this. If you look at where the Nets are, and believe it or not, I think four games below 500, they're still number 7 in the Eastern Conference. I guess that's not too much of a shock, but there are 6 good teams in the East. They're just not sitting in the 7th and 8th spot. They'd be a number 7 seed. Who's in the number 2 seed? Who are they playing the first round? They play the Toronto Raptors. You don't think Kevin Durant coming back to the Brooklyn Nets can help make some noise against the Toronto Raptors and the rest of the Eastern Conference? Of course they can. And by the way, if Kevin Durant is healthy, if he's healthy, listen, if he's not healthy, this isn't even a conversation. Like, it really, there's no point in the conversation if he's not healthy. He shouldn't be pressured by anybody, absolutely nobody, when it comes to you know, coming back or coming back too soon or any of that stuff. So I don't want to have that perception at all. But if KD is healthy, of course he should come back. I mean, the Brooklyn Nets would have a legitimate chance to make a run in the Eastern Conference. I'm not saying they're going to get past the Milwaukee Bucks. Maybe there's other teams. Maybe they lose in the first round to the Toronto Raptors because the Raptors have so much equity built together. Some of these players that won a championship last year, minus Kawhi Leonard. But I will tell you, KD is the second best player in the league if he's healthy. And if you can get the second best player in the NBA, and you can go through this process where by the time NBA, let's just say best case scenario, NBA started again July 1st. Actually, no. Let's say best case scenario, NBA started again mid-June. That would be 90 days that the NBA has been stopped, right? So 90 days that the NBA has been stopped, everybody is going to have to start over. So I don't think KD would be that far behind. Granted, I go back to this, he's got to be healthy. If he's healthy, then get in there and see if you can make a run with the Brooklyn Nets. If he's not healthy, then it's no conversation at all. But that's been an interesting conversation going on all day. Did you guys hear Charles Oakley's incredibly stupid comments about his former teammate Patrick Ewing? If you haven't heard it, I'll talk about it when we come back. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show. Appreciate you guys tuning in. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, we'll go till 9 o'clock tonight. Just a quick reminder: Sean Winsor, USA Today, is coming up next. Last Dance has a double standard. Curious to actually get his thoughts on this because he obviously has a view. Everybody, I think, has been loving the Last Dance. But it really, more than anything else, you know, it is Michael Jordan's story. So I think he's got a different perspective on that. So did you guys get a chance to hear Charles Oakley, some of his comments that he had about his former teammate, Patrick Ewing? If you haven't, let me feel free to kind of give you a little update here on what Charles Oakley said. So there's been so much conversation that comes from The Last Dance. It's coming because it could be the Pistons playing the Chicago Bulls, and then the next day it's going to be conversations. First Take's going to have Bill Laimbeer on, or Isaiah Thomas is going to come on. Dennis Rodman is going to have some comments. And then the next day, or the next episode, there's going to be a completely different conversation that's going to be had. So this past episode, we saw the Chicago Bulls take on the New York Knicks. And the Knicks, if you guys remember, went up 2-0 in that series. Chicago comes back, wins 4 games in a row. Charles Oakley told the Post, Patrick at the end of the game, he'd get double teamed. He'd shoot fadeaways on double teams, and that hurt us as a team. The Bulls had Michael, and we had Patrick. It's like seeing Beyonce and going to see someone trying to be Beyonce. If Beyonce is in town, everyone's going to see Beyonce. If Michael and Patrick are in town, everyone is going to see Michael. They had the show. We tried to stop them, and we couldn't stop them. There was more to that storyline. Really, at the end of the day, he was just saying that Bulls team was better. He also said he had some comments about Pat Riley, that he felt like, from a coaching perspective, Phil Jackson outcoached them, said that the Knicks were playing checkers and that the Chicago Bulls were playing chess. Listen, I don't need to get into how many points Patrick Ewing was averaging that series. I will. I'll tell you what it is in a second. I don't need to get into the type of contributions that Patrick Ewing had in that series. It's really irrelevant and it's unnecessary. What I'd rather spend the time doing is, you know, I'm sitting here and trying to figure out Charles Oakley, who was a part of that team. By the way, played with the Chicago Bulls, played with Michael Jordan early in Jordan's career, and I know they have a really good relationship. Aren't you supposed to win and lose as a team? I mean, isn't the concept supposed to be that you eventually, whether you win together or you lose together, but one of those two results are going to come, and that's kind of the concept of team sports. Tell me how somebody like Charles Oakley, who, by the way, was a good role player, you know, a really good role player. He had a specific role for the New York Knicks. And I enjoyed actually that style of basketball. I was talking about this yesterday. I did Lakers talk yesterday and we're talking about that 90s era. I love that 90s era. And I like the way that Knicks team played basketball, that hard nosed. Remember Anthony Mason, John Starks. They had a number of players that you enjoyed watching that style of basketball. But let's be very frank here. Patrick Ewing was so by far the best player on that team. And to come out publicly and point the finger at one of your teammates is such BS. I mean, to be having a conversation right now where Charles Oakley is pointing the finger at everybody else but himself is such BS. Like, I don't know how else to tell you how much respect I lost for Charles Oakley just by reading those two quotes right there. And you know New York is going to run with, you know, from a media perspective, especially right now with no sports going on. You don't think the New York Post and the New York Times is going to be the front cover on their sports page saying, look what Charles Oakley said about Patrick Ewing. How stupid. How stupid. How unfortunate to have one of your players in that time, one of your teammates in that time, bury a Patrick Ewing. Did he not win an NBA championship? He didn't. But you want me to list off all the players that didn't win NBA championships in the 90s because of Michael Jordan? Because I can go down that list. It was Patrick Ewing. It was Charles Oakley. It was John Starks. You want to add more to that list? It was Karl Malone. It was John Stockton. It was Sean Kemp. It was Reggie Miller. It was Charles Barkley. I mean, how many great players do you want me to name off that didn't win championships in the 90s because of that Jordan and that Bulls era? But where are those players coming out and pointing the finger at other players on their team? That one didn't sit well with me. And I'm sure that didn't sit well with a lot of people. I was mentioning this to Jess. I'm like, look, I appreciate people's honesty. I appreciate if somebody feels a certain way, I appreciate it. But that's not right. And it's also not right to come out in the media and have comments like that. You want to have those conversations behind the scenes. Because, by the way, if you're doing this, basically all you're saying is that you want some attention. That's all this is. You want some attention. And he's getting attention, but I think he's getting attention for the wrong reasons. Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan. He's the greatest of all time. I mean, to say that Michael Jordan was better than Patrick Ewing, we all know that. Why even have that as a conversation? We're all very, very aware of that. But that's BS to throw one of your players under the bus. And if, you know, it doesn't matter what team, what franchise, what sport, anybody who does that, that's a low blow. And I can't tell you how annoying that would be if you're Patrick Ewing and this is what you're reading from one of your teammates. By the way, just a heads up on this. Patrick Ewing averaged almost 26 points and 11 rebounds, shot 53% in that six-game series. In the series turning game five, Ewing had 33 points, 12 of 23 from the field, and 9 rebounds. So I don't know if you could add Charles Oakley's stats over the course of a season and he'd do that. He'd do what Patrick Ewing did. But talk about not cool and not right to throw one of your teammates under the bus. I can't find another example like that. Okay, so I mentioned this, and I want to just point it out again. I'll give this a little bit of a pub here. So Sean Winsor, USA Today, Last Dance has a double standard. I'm looking forward to having him on because I know I've had my view on this documentary, and all I've talked about is how great it is. All I've talked about is, oh my gosh, I'm learning so much about some of these players I didn't know, or all the kind of unique storylines that are coming out of this that, frankly, I forgot about. You know, I completely forgot about. But he's also going to give us a different perspective because there is, listen, you could say there is a little bit of a double standard. Let me explain what I mean by that. The Isaiah Thomas thing has took a life of its own. The Jerry Krause thing has took a life of its own. So a lot of what's going on in this Last Dance, there's a lot of pub from Michael Jordan to obviously have that platform, and that's what I want to hear. I mean, to be frank, I don't want to hear any more about Isaiah Thomas. I want to hear about Michael Jordan. I want to hear about Dennis Rodman, Scottie Pippen, Phil Jackson, some of the greats that are part of that Bulls era. But this article will go into a little bit of how it's a little bit more one-sided. So I'm definitely looking forward to have kind of the other side of it, and I think we're going to get that here coming up. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show, 710 ESPN, USA Today coming up next. Stay right here.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
I appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll go till 9 o'clock. You know, it's crazy. I feel like every time we start doing this show, from just like a topic perspective, just thinking about the times of where we are right now and not having live sports. And don't get me wrong, nobody wants live sports back more than I do. But it is kind of crazy to think every single day there's new stuff coming. There's new stuff that's coming out. There's something different to talk about. And yeah, some of that is from The Last Dance. You know, we know what that's done, but it's also all the different storylines about when baseball's coming back. Okay, what scenarios can play out? All right, how about the NBA? They just started the South Korea started baseball last night, and I know ESPN was airing it. I'm actually got game four on in the background. Yankees and the Boston Red Sox. This was the start of Boston's comeback, where they won four games in a row and they win the World Series. But there's been these small little stories. I thought Meta World Peace, who was on The Athletic, did a podcast with the group there. I think the podcast, yes, what was that? The Tampering Podcast. That's what it was, with Sam Amick and Joe Varden. And anytime we get Meta World Peace, always look forward to hearing from him. But coming off this Last Dance documentary, Jerry Krause, who has been really demolished over these last couple of weeks because the finger's been pointed at him of breaking up this dynasty. I played some sound yesterday from Magic on First Take, and Magic said that, you know, that's it. That's the difference. There's no reason why. Magic said they could have won 10, 11, 12 championships if it wasn't for Jerry Krause. I don't know if I go that far, but certainly you would have thought that the Chicago Bulls, if it wasn't for Jerry Krause, if it wasn't for Jerry Reinsdorf, don't ever forget the owner, then maybe they would have had more opportunity to win, not just into the 90s, but maybe leaking into the 2000 as well, where we all know what happened. Started 2000, Phil Jackson came to the Lakers, five championships for the Lakers over the next 10 years or so. But here's Meta World Peace on Athletics Tampering Podcast, that he was honored to be drafted by Jerry Krause of the Chicago Bulls. But listen to what Jerry Krause was envisioning with Meta World Peace.
For me, it's like Jerry drafted me after Michael Jordan left. So for me, I'm the Bulls is my favorite team. I play with them all the time on the video games, right? So as a 19-year-old kid, I'm just like, wow, right? And then Jerry told me one day, I love Jerry. Jerry's like, Ron, we're going to get number 7. You're going to be here, and it's going to just destroy those other 6 titles. And Jerry would always say that number 7 is the most important one, right?
I find that so unbelievable that, and you could hear in that conversation, Sam Amick and Joe Varden, I'm sure they're both laughing. I find it so unbelievable that that was the thought process of Jerry Krause. I mean, Jerry Krause wanted so bad to get more credit. He wanted so bad to prove that he doesn't need Michael Jordan. He doesn't need Phil Jackson. He doesn't need Scottie Pippen. Like, think about how insane that sounds. Most of the time, this is a conversation that I think, you know, we've had on this show a number of different times, but most of the time, these dynasties lose because another team came in and just were better. When the Lakers were winning championships, eventually in the 80s, another team came around, whether it was the Detroit Pistons or it was the Chicago Bulls. Eventually, another team kind of took over. But what didn't happen was internally, you lost. And for the Chicago Bulls, the biggest competition, the only competition that defeated Michael Jordan and that Chicago Bulls team was their own front office. And Jerry Krause telling Meta World Peace, number 7 is so important. You're going to help us get to number 7. I mean, how off can you be? I heard today, too, Scottie Pippen was on the trade market for Tracy McGrady. And Tracy McGrady was a rookie. So it was just as Tracy McGrady was being drafted. I think what they were trying to do was trade for the pick, and then they would have drafted Tracy McGrady. And this was that 97-98 season. I mean, does that just tell you how bad Jerry Krause just wanted to do it his own way? How bad he wanted to get rid of those other players? I'm sure there's financial side to things. But damn, if you're winning, you know what I mean? Like, if you're still winning, if you're still making it happen, to still kind of lose it on that entire front when you're actually having success, you're the team having success. I'll go on kind of a little bit different of a direction. Here's a funny story from Meta World Peace. So obviously they're all talking Last Dance on this podcast, and Meta, after the Jerry Krause conversation, another conversation comes up. And I don't know if you guys knew this. I think I remember hearing this, but I definitely I have forgotten about it. Let's put it that way. And Meta World Peace was talking about a practice that he had where he was playing pickup ball with Michael Jordan. And I'll let him tell the story. Here's Meta on playing with Jordan pickup basketball.
And the ref called an offensive foul. And I'm like, yeah. And then Jordan's like this. I'm like, oh. So then I remember, like, I think I heard Michael Jordan. So I went home and I didn't leave my house for like 2 days. I didn't go back to the gym. And everybody was like, where you at? I was just home. You know, I was drinking some Hennessy. I was just like, and then, you know, the Bulls didn't hear from me. And then Jordan called me. And Jordan was like, hey, man, it's okay. Things happen. And don't worry about it. Then I went back to playing. You know, it was one of the greatest phone calls I got in my life.
Meta's the best. I mean, Meta is just completely all over the place. And I love the fact that he tells that story. He tells it in such detail how bad he felt. He just took out Michael Jordan. He just broke Jordan's ribs. He's not leaving the home. He says he's drinking Hennessy and just hanging out at home. Last one on Meta World Peace. Obviously, one of the darker moments in the NBA, no question about it, one of the darkest moments in the NBA was the Malice at the Palace. Here's Meta talking about Jordan reaching out to him after all that happened.
After the Broy called me, like maybe a month in, because Jordan's great. He's real strategic, I guess, on how he presents himself. His mom taught him well, you know. So you know, and I think Jordan waits to see, like, if he can help you, he'll help. You know, just calling, that's a big help.
Yeah,
and we hear from Michael Jordan, but at the time, I just wasn't able to take leadership. Well, I wasn't listening to any leaders.
Interesting.
That I had like Miller or anyone, you know, right. Nothing you could say to get through to me.
All right, that's Meta World Peace right there. Man, we got to try and find a way to get Meta on, man. I just love the guy. I mean, I love his personality. I love how honest he is. I love how real he is. And anytime, you know, he's in any of these interviews under any of those circumstances, he's as honest as it gets. Okay, coming up next. Sean Windsor of the USA Today will continue to talk a little bit about The Last Dance. Like I mentioned, his article talks about how it's a little bit of a double standard. So we'll get his view, his thoughts on all this coming up next. Stay right here. This is The Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, Sean Windsor, USA Today. Last Dance has a double standard problem. Just ask Isaiah Thomas. Sean, thanks for taking some time and joining the show. How are you doing?
Oh, thanks for having me, Alan. By the way, real quickly, it's I actually work for the Detroit Free Press, but a lot of my stuff gets picked up by USA Today. It's the same company.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so Detroit Free Press. So, listen, I want to get your overall thoughts on The Last Dance. I could see where you're going on this when you say that there's a double standard problem. Explain what you mean there, because I think for a lot of us, we might be watching this and just, you know, in awe of, wow, what a unbelievable era, and here's Michael Jordan from when he's in college at North Carolina and all these in-between storylines. But just your overall thoughts so far on the documentary.
Well, I think a lot of people here in the Detroit metropolitan area have the same sort of sense of wonder and awe and remember that era very well, obviously. And specifically to Jordan, he was like nobody else, right? And really, maybe there hadn't been anybody quite like him since. Kobe was probably the closest just in terms of the way he played and the sort of athletic grace and explosiveness and all of that. The issue that, and maybe I'll probably overstate and call it an issue, but it sort of reopened some wounds around here for folks because they feel like the bad boys teams have never quite gotten their due. And maybe partly, you know, that was their own doing, right? I mean, they played with a certain style of hard fouls, and they played bully ball at times. But they also were led by a couple of Hall of Fame guards that were sort of beautiful to watch in their own right. Mm-hmm. And it's the one of the installments the other night on Sunday. I can't remember, excuse me, if this is the first or the second installment at this point, Sunday night, but they got into the Knicks and how that was the rival after the Pistons with Jordan and the Bulls.
Sure.
And those guys played just about as physically. Mm-hmm. Oakley, Mason, Ewing maybe not so much, but he was physical, but they didn't quite have the skill, which is to go along with that physicality, which is why they didn't ultimately win. But that's kind of the double standard that I speak of that a lot of people here feel like. And obviously Isaiah Thomas is a complicated figure and has had sort of an uneven career, post-playing career for sure. But I think it's just tapped into this idea that the Bad Boys didn't get their due. It's the most beloved team around here in the last 40 years because it was so Detroit. And if you live here, you know, you have a chip on your shoulder, right? It's not L.A., it's not New York, it's not even Chicago. And so there's a sensitivity to that, that this, the way this region's looked at, this city's looked at, that team represents that. And so people are watching this documentary, and as beautiful as it is in a lot of ways, and as compelling as it is, it's just that sense that they're not quite getting their due here, even now, 30 years later.
You know what I don't understand, Sean, and I think I said this after, so episodes 3 and 4 is when this Bad Boy era started, right? As in the documentary. So that's when they're showing that the Bulls lose to the Detroit Pistons 2 years in a row. And then eventually, you know, they beat the Detroit Pistons and then beat the Los Angeles Lakers. Jordan gets his first chip. I never understood why it gets a bad rap, because I'll just tell you from a fan perspective, I don't think I think anything less of that Bad Boys Pistons team and that Bad Boy era than I do some of the other, you know, championships that have been won. And I say that because does it really matter how you win? Like I feel the way Bill Laimbeer has approached this whole thing is like, no, I didn't apologize then and I wouldn't apologize now. I kind of like that. Like that's what made those Bad Boys and those Pistons who they were. So they were comfortable with being uncomfortable. They were comfortable with being the villain. But at the end of the day, they won. You know, like the Knicks, they don't have a championship to hoist up, you know, certainly not in that 90s era. They don't have that success that the Detroit Pistons do. I wonder that, you know, when you mentioned, and obviously being from the Detroit Free Press, is that something that you think Pistons fans or just people from Detroit, they watch The Last Dance right now, you think they're looking for something like that? They feel like they should get more credit? Because I don't think it should matter, because at the end of the day, they got those two championships, and who cares what other people think?
Right. Well, and I certainly understand what you're saying. It taps into the sense of how people are here and how this region is seen, particularly Detroit. I mean, think about what you think of the city, mm-hmm. in general, and the things that come to your mind. And I think that team tapped into that in a way that gave folks around here pride. And I think they feel, because you're right about Laimbeer. He went on last week, I think, on ESPN, actually, right?
Rachel Lynch. yeah, exactly, on the
and
jump.
Said, and he said he'd do it all over again. And that's the difference, real quickly, Alan, between Laimbeer and Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas, if you'll remember, and I'm not sure how old you are, in the early 80s, he was as fun a player to watch as there was in the NBA, maybe other than Magic. And the flair he played with, and they were on a bunch of high-scoring teams. He played with Kelly Rupuka, and they didn't really play any defense at that point. And he was sort of one of the golden boys of the league at that point. You know, he won a national title in Indiana. Laimbeer really never had that period where he was so beloved like that, but Isaiah was, and then it flipped for him. And I think on some level he wants to be loved and revered like those other guys, because he's just about – he's obviously not Jordan or Magic or Bird, but he's not far from them in terms of overall talent. I mean, you know, he's one of the best little guys to ever play, maybe the best guy. And so it's more complicated for him. It's harder for him to say, I don't care. You can see, if you've seen some of these interviews with him, how much it pains him.
Oh, he cares.
The way his reputation, right? And with Laimbeer, yeah, he was kind of a jerk in a lot of ways, and he owned it, and people loved him here for it. And by the way, you know, he, in one of those finals of the year they beat Portland, he hit 6 threes in one of those games. So he was kind of a, you know, he had some skill himself, right? He wasn't just a guy knocking people on their butt. He could shoot. He was an original sort of ahead of his time stretch five. And those teams as a whole, sorry, Alan, had a lot of skill all over the place, like Hall of Fame skill. And people only see the clips of them knocking people down. when they clearly, you know, they were crossing people up and hitting floaters and off the drive. I mean, they were really, really talented. And that's just gotten lost. And I think that's what frustrates people around here.
Well, it is, you know, that's a great way to put it. You're not winning two NBA championships in the freaking 80s era and at the start of the 90s unless you're an amazing team. And, of course, you're doing much more than just knocking people on their behind. But there is this picture that's been painted that's all the Detroit Pistons were. What do you think of this quote from Jordan? It's in your article, but I do want to get your thoughts on it. I respect Isaiah Thomas. Talent, to me, the best point guard of all time is Magic Johnson, and right behind him is Isaiah Thomas. No matter how much I hate him, I respect his game.
Well, he's honest, right? I mean, and he's been honest in the documentary. He was honest way back when they finally beat him, but not quite like that. He didn't give him the respect, Isaiah, in terms of the game. But yeah, he doesn't like him, and I don't know that Isaiah Thomas has the same hate for Jordan. You know, it's hard because Jordan was kind of the king of the league, and he still is in a lot of ways. But I don't know if you remember this, when the Bulls finally beat the Pistons after losing to them, I think 3 years in a row, actually. The Phil Jackson, the coach of the Bulls, obviously at the time, and then Jordan both said, and this is before they won Game 4 when they swept them, that the Pistons had been bad for basketball, and Jordan even called them undeserving or unworthy champions, maybe, right? So in other words, they somehow cheated to win it. And that was partly why those guys walked off. At least that's what Lambeer said, why he walked off. He felt disrespected. He was like, well, screw you, right? And he's owned it ever since. But I can remember that, those quotes at that time and just the way they were being talked about. So they felt like that whole run they'd had, three straight finals, you know, right? Remember the Lakers in 88, they lost in Game 7.
That's right.
Three straight finals and five straight conference finals. And in one spring, one early summer, they felt like it was all wiped away because here comes Jordan. They had Magic Bird, and here comes Jordan, and they're just a footnote. And I think, you know, the hate part of it, it is understandable from Jordan. He was trying to beat him. But along in part of that was, I mean, the huge part of that was the way they were dismissed.
Sean Windsor, Detroit Free Press, talking about The Last Dance, and I guess the right angle to say is a double standard. By the way, do you think a lot of this was, you think a lot of this was just media built? The way that perception was driven by kind of this media narrative.
Maybe a little bit. They're responsible. The Pistons themselves are obviously responsible for some of it. I mean, they embraced the Bad Boys. They marketed themselves that way. They made T-shirts. The NBA actually, you know, didn't mind that at all because people tuned in to watch.
Got to have a villain. Got to have a villain.
Yeah, exactly. You tune in, but you're right. You're not going to win just telling people to go on to the Knicks would have won, right? They just didn't have the perimeter skill that the Pistons did, but with Joe Dumars and Isaiah Thomas and even Vinny Johnson. But I think part of it's media, but the Pistons are absolutely responsible for some of this, and they will tell you that. But it's a complicated legacy. But boy, they were a good team. And by the way, I don't want to. People around here certainly respect Jordan's game too, and I don't want to diminish him. I remember I was a freshman in Austin, Texas, Jordan's rookie year, and a friend of mine and I drove down to San Antonio in the old Hemisphere Arena to watch him play. 2 months in, the league could be—he's become a sensation at that point. And the buzz, even then, Alan, just like six weeks, 2 months in, there was nothing like it. It's funny. I tell my kids who are in their early 20s, it's hard to describe how he changed and how different and unique he was, and how the energy that he had and the way he played, how breathtaking that was. It's kind of amazing, and the documentary's done a good job of recapturing that.
Sean, did you hear what Charles Oakley had to say a little bit earlier today about Patrick Ewing?
I did not. Or maybe I saw a headline. Is it something about they should have won maybe? Or you, what did he say exactly?
I mean, just put it literally to paraphrase it. Because of Patrick Ewing, they didn't win that series. And this is coming from The Last Dance, so obviously that they're showing that 4-2 series loss. Knicks took the first two games, and then they end up losing four games in a row. He said, Patrick, at the end of the game, he'd get double teamed. He'd shoot fadeaways on double teams, and that hurt our team. The Bulls had met Michael, and we had Patrick. It's like seeing Beyonce. and going to see someone trying to be Beyonce. If Beyonce is in town, everyone's going to see Beyonce. If Michael and Patrick are in town, everyone's going to go see Michael. They had the show. We tried to stop them, and we couldn't stop them. A lot of finger pointing, and it was pointed specifically at Patrick Ewing. Just because we're sitting on this Last Dance topic, what are your thoughts from a former player throwing Patrick Ewing under the bus like that?
I don't. I mean, Charles Oakley was obviously a tough guy himself, right? And he was a nice, solid role player. He was Jordan's enforcer when he played with him at the Bulls. But I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's fair. The thing about basketball, and I know back then centers were much more dominant a part of the game. But teams still needed perimeter guys. Even then, the Lakers obviously had perimeter people. I mean, they had the best point guard ever. The Celtics. McHale and Paris were great, but they didn't win any titles. That Bird, he scored larger than the perimeter. Patrick Ewing had a beautiful fadeaway. He had a great touch. He had great feet, but the ball still has. You have to get the ball. You don't control the ball. The teams that win titles, and it's been true for maybe Olajuwon and Houston. That's maybe the exception, although they had shooters. I mean, but you could, those who can control the ball and make buckets down the stretch. On the edge of the court are the teams that win, and that's to say Ewing's not Jordan. I don't think that's fair at all. Ewing was a great player. Who was on that team that was a great perimeter player? Derek Harp was a nice guard. I remember him, but
Starks was a nice guard. Nice guards, but this isn't your Robin.
He was a freaky shooter. He wasn't right. You weren't going to give him the ball and say, "Okay, go get a bucket," with 2 minutes left. He wasn't quite that. That's not fair. And you can double on the post, and it's just I think that's unfair. I mean,
100% with you.
Blame.
Yeah, 100% with you. And that's why I was like, let me make that kind of the final question to bring it up. But Sean, listen, it's interesting insight, and to kind of have somebody we've talked so much this Jordan Isaiah thing has obviously been a conversation, maybe too big of a conversation from the documentary. But to get your opinion, you know, you being out at the Detroit Free Press. It's some great insight to get. So thank you for doing this.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, Alan.
All right. That's Sean Windsor right there. Okay. Let's switch gears when we come back. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see this, but Dodgers pitcher Ross Stripling was on the Athletics Scribes of Summer podcast. I want to play some clips of that, some pieces of that. Plus, Tony Clark, head of MLB Players Union, has some comments on trying to figure out what some of baseball can look like in the future. And then also Maria Torres, LA Times, she's coming up around 7:45. So stay right here. All that coming up next. This is The Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.